when some anti-racist starts his comments, he almost invariably keeps using the word ignorant. Now, I've spent my life in debates and discussions, and I know a couple of things. I know where he's coming from. I also know that this is a person with whom I can't have a rational conversation. Now, let's start with the reason he uses this word ignorant. All of his professors told him what the politically correct truth was. He therefore assumes that anybody who opposes him has not heard what the politically correct truth is. Sometimes when I point out to one of these people who's using the word ignorant that I'm a former professor, his reaction is a great deal like that of a loyal Catholic discussing theology if I were to say in passing, well, you know, I used to be a pope. He is completely taken aback by the fact that I've heard it. Yes, I've heard it. I've heard it over and over and over and over again. I'm not ignorant of it. He genuinely feels that if I heard Professor so-and-so say it, if I had a true education, I wouldn't be so ignorant of what the truth is. And this is as deep as his thinking goes. Now, this is an example of the sort of person that I talked to try to give him some slight feel for reality. But obviously, I'm not going to have a serious discussion with this person, and not much learning is going to go on either way. It's exactly as if you were a mathematician who wanted to study advanced calculus, and you had to first begin by explaining the multiplication tables to someone. They simply are not in your league. Someone who used the word ignorant when they're dealing with people who won't preserve the white race are simply not in the same league. Now, I spend a good deal of my time talking to you. I spend a good deal of my time talking to the aunties, but obviously, as an old man, I have limited time, and I'd like to talk to people who are capable of seeing reality as it is, who've already been through the multiplication tables. And when someone uses the word ignorant, he hasn't gotten to those multiplication tables yet. Another person who has not gotten to those multiplication tables yet, that is, and that's a practical matter with me because I know how much time I can afford to spend with them, is someone who would be surprised at what I call the Al Capp phenomenon. Al Capp was the cartoonist who did Little Abner. I don't know how many people still remember Little Abner, but Capp described himself as a liberal New York Jew, and he made his living making fun of Ozark Mountaineers. I don't know of any Ozark Mountaineers who make their living making fun of New York Jews, but at least Capp caught on near the end of his life to what was going on. He pointed out that, as I say, he called himself a typical New York liberal Jew. He wasn't ashamed of any of it. But he could also admit when he was wrong. And down through the years, he had made fun of the John Birch Society and the New Yorkers that all giggle with him. And he made fun of the Klan and the New Yorkers all giggled with him. He made fun of General Bull Moose, the monopoly capitalist, in his comic strips. And everybody giggled with him. Then, in the 1960s, he made fun of the Love Generation. You know, the ones who always talked about how the flower children loved everybody. Love, love, love was all they talked about. Well, he made fun of them in Little Abner. And he said, "Let me admit that I never knew what the word hate actually meant." He said, "The worst hate mail I got from the Ku Klux Klan compared to the hate mail I routinely got from the Love Generation sounded like an invitation to a tea party." You'd never seen that kind of language, that sort of pure, unadulterated, clean hatred. Now, if this strikes you as a contradiction, then it's a little, for me, it's a little like dealing with someone. I want to discuss advanced calculus, and I'm having to recite the multiplication tables to them. You have to start there to understand that a person who says, "I'm doing this for your own good," is always going to be merciless. And as a more general rule, anyone who capitalizes the word love is going to be a champion hater. Anyone who capitalizes the word truth. Now, why would you capitalize the word truth? It's because the capitalized word truth is always an excuse for censoring. The simple truth, the small t truth, the facts. That's what the truth is all about. If you meant the same thing with a big T truth as you do with a small t truth, then you wouldn't need a big T truth. Same thing's true of mercy. The Inquisition and the Protestant Counter Inquisition, some of the most brutal things that ever happened in Western history, both of them claimed that they represented capitalized truth and capitalized mercy. In order to have true mercy, that is to say, to save people's souls, you couldn't have any mercy on their physical bodies. Now, the point I'm trying to make here is not that this is true, but that if this is news to you, then you're not really the kind of person I can discuss advanced calculus with. You have to start there. A capitalized virtue is always the enemy of an uncapitalized virtue. Now, the point is that I can't really talk with somebody to whom all this is news. As I said before, someone who actually thinks that the only reason I disagree with orthodoxy is because I haven't heard orthodoxy is someone I'm willing to devote a little time to, but I'm not going to learn anything from them. And they are probably not going to learn anything from me. So most people are not going to understand that what I'm making here is not a philosophical point, it's a personal point. There are people let me put it this way. You have to know a certain number of things before you can discuss the subject. And if you haven't been introduced to the subject, if you don't already know that someone who is pronouncing the truth or someone who is screaming love, 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 that is the truth with capital T or love, love, love with capital L, that these are two people who will, the first one will smash the facts in the name of truth, and the other one is capable of a hatred that would make your ears burn. If you don't have that much acquaintanceship with reality, then I really cannot discuss things with you. And that is my point here. I'm making these points, but it's sort of, again, I'm sort of going over basic algebra on the way to calculus. Now there's another capital letter versus small letter. There is the future versus the future. Now, truth with a small t just means the facts. Truth with a capital T is an excuse to crush and censor the facts. The future with a capital F is pronounced. I remember John McCain, when he finally came down on one side or the other, when they asked him about Bob Jones University not allowing interracial dating, he said, "This is the 21st century." Well, we all know what that means. When someone says, "This is 2006, he is pronouncing what everybody is supposed to believe in the year 2006. Now, it would be a bit of a surprise if what everybody has to believe in the year 2006 had anything to do with what was actually going on or real thought or anything like that. No, he is pronouncing the future and the present. He is saying what you have to believe today about the present and the future. That's why he uses the word 2006. I have been through, just to cut it up easily, this is my sixth decade of dealing with the inevitable future. Now, one thing I've noticed is that this is the sixth inevitable future I've dealt with, and everybody has forgotten what the other five were. Because the future with a capital F is different from the future with a small f. The future with a small f just means this is what's going to happen. Just like truth just means this is what is. The future with a capital F is exactly like truth with a capital T. It has absolutely nothing to do with what is going to happen. And everybody knows what the future, and as McCain indicated, it's the 21st century, therefore you believe this. And of course in the 1920s it would have been a different truth, a different future, a different present. That's why I keep referring to political correctness as a religion. Now this may offend some people who are religious. Most of what I say offends somebody. I feel like I'm wasting my time if I don't, but I said before, it's sort of like for someone to say that he is a former college professor and he doesn't agree with college professors strikes the average person who uses the word ignorant as if the way it would strike a good Catholic if I were to say, well, I'm an ex-pope myself. But every established religion has to pronounce, as we say in churches I've been to, what is and ever will be. Now, the Christian version of that runs into some problems because in the Catholic Church, for example, for 1500 years, one of the most famous debates that ever occurred was between St. Augustine and Pelagius the Heretic. And Pelagius the Heretic objected to St. Augustine's doctrine that an unbaptized baby was damned. This is one of the most famous debates in church history. Pelagianism was damned. Damned. Yes, it was declared a heresy. Pelagius is still a heretic. But in the second half of the 20th century, this doctrine that unbaptized babies are damned became very inconvenient. And it's hard to find any theologian who will stand by the church as it stood for 1500 years. On the other hand, the Catholic Church takes its doctrines very seriously. Unlike the modern Protestant denominations, they can switch sides on a dime. I'm talking about the mainline ones, the ones whose membership is in decline. But the Catholic Church can't just say we were wrong. So it's in a very bad position with regard to unbaptized babies. And though most people don't know it, Galileo is still under condemnation by the church, even though the church has, church schools have adopted all of his doctrines, all of the things he observed through his little telescope. And Pelagius is a heretic and probably will always be a heretic, while at the same time the church is trying to move over toward his position versus St. Augustine's position. My point here is that every theology is what has been and always will be. Now, political correctness is exactly the same. Political correctness is also called progressivism. Well, if you go into the word progressive, it means progress. And what the word, the only meaning of the word progress is that you are moving towards the future. Well, the Catholic Church had its problems 1,500 years ago, or in case of Galileo, 400 or 500 years ago. The politically correct faith has its problems in the last decade and past decades. In the 1950s, it was considered inevitable in politically correct doctrine that the price system, the idea of distributing things according to price, was silly and inefficient. And Galbraith and Schlesinger and all of these economists who made their got their awards for saying just that are still heroes of the political left, and nobody goes into what they said. For example, I remember when I was in graduate economics, one liberal economist wrote something called How to Make a Burden Out of the Public Debt, and he argued that everything ought to be financed by issuing debt because national debt was essentially free money. It was just money we owed to ourselves. Now, this was a serious economics article. In fact, it represented the majority opinion of economists in the 1960s. These are the same liberal economists who have been screaming about the national debt since Ronald Reagan went into office. But you're never, ever going to see a liberal or a respectable conservative quote that article or that philosophy, because that was the truth at the time, that the future meant more debt and more debt and more debt, and that was good. That was the progressive position, which, like a mathematician friend of mine, he said, well, it used to take forever to do so-and-so. And I said, man, you're a mathematician. You know that nothing used to take forever by definition. The progressive who declares the inevitable future and is wrong has just ceased to be a progressive. They cannot afford to be wrong. So if public opinion turns against interracial marriage, which I'm pretty sure it will as the more and more groups come in together, everybody will conveniently forget what McCain said about it. And when the Soviet Union collapsed, all of a sudden, the same Stalinist economists in the Soviet Union who had been declared progressives before were suddenly declared reactionaries. And the reason was that the inevitable had just changed. But the progressive can never admit that, as I say, this is my sixth, if you count it by decades, inevitable future I'm sitting in the middle of. And the last five have been conveniently, totally forgotten. in my book in 1976, A Plague on Both Your Houses, I started off talking about our most trusted inevitables have collapsed around our ears, with quotation marks around the inevitables. I was the only one who had mentioned that. If you wanted to be a respectable conservative, or, God knows, if you wanted to be a liberal, you simply could not point out that the inevitable future had been evited pretty strongly. In a serious Muslim country, which is today still theocratic, you would not be allowed to say, well, the world will never be all Muslim. When the established religion of the West was the church. It is now political correctness, but, and so the church isn't taking it seriously, but back when the church was the established religion, you did not say in a Catholic country that the world would never be all Catholic, or in a Protestant country that the world would never be all Protestant. It was, you may have been allowed to get away with it, but it would have been a very risky proposition, just as today. If you say that the world is not headed to a new world order, there's some disagreement between Bush and liberals as to what that new world order will be, but a multicultural, multiracial world, by which they mean all present white countries, if you attack their idea of the inevitable future, you are taking a grave risk, because the present, as I say, this is my sixth inevitable future that I'm living in the middle of now, looking forward to, laughing at, and each of the other ones consisted of more of the same. The future always means more of the same at present. Whatever is in power at present, or whatever people are heavily invested in at present, that is the official version of the inevitable future. And when you attack that, it had nothing to do with the future. You're attacking the established interests. Where do you think people who, there's a field called futurology, now where do you think the people who make up all these futurology journals and so forth, where do you think they get their money? Do you think they get their money from the future? No. A futurologist constructs a future according to the people who give him money. That journal has to be paid for, and even if it's not just money, it's also a matter of power. You can make all the correct predictions. Take it from me. You can make all the correct predictions in the world, and that'll have nothing to do with how much attention people pay you. Attention comes from power, from owning a major magazine, owning a major journal, only owning a major university, they don't call it owning, but financing, or getting the financing, or being a professor. But that, remember, is not, what I did not say was, futurology is based on who will someday own the means of communication. I said futurology depends on those who do, at present, own the means of communication. So McCain, when he says, this is the 21st century, he is reflecting what the multicultural future, which everybody has to say is inevitable. It's not because it's inevitable, but because it has to be inevitable. That's the nature of an established religion. That's the nature of an establishment. So, if you seriously sit around reading futurology journals to figure out what the future will be like, or if you seriously say, well, this is a modern idea and therefore will continue into the future, I can humor you, but I really can't talk to you. You have to understand arithmetic before I can discuss advanced calculus with you. And this is the way I have to divide up my time. As I say, I'm getting a little old now, and I don't have all the time in the world, and I can't really play with children's toys. So if you seriously believe, if you take the people seriously who talk about futurology, then we really don't have a whole hell of a lot to talk about. I have pointed out, and you know, Whitaker's or Bob's mantra, that all respectable conservatives and liberals agree that there, as in the case of McCain, for example, that there is this race problem. Now, this race problem only exists in white countries. This race problem will be solved when every presently white country is a multiracial country. And by multi, that means uniracial. That is to say, they'd all be brown. So the solution to the race problem is to bring the third world into all white countries and only into white countries and assimilate, as the conservatives call it. That is to say, form them into a single uniformly brown race. This does not apply to Asia. As I said, Taiwan and Japan have less people per square mile than Belgium or the Netherlands, but and their per capita income is quite comparable. But the third world has to pour into Belgium and the Netherlands, but not into Taiwan or Japan, because, as we all know, the Netherlands and Belgium are predominantly white countries. That's where the race problem exists. And therefore, that is where the final solution to the race problem is necessary and therefore inevitable. I'm expanding on a little. I have a shorter version you have to use with less advanced people, but that's now, if, as I've said, if I were to say, well, there's this race problem. It exists in Belize. It exists in Jamaica. It exists in Haiti. It exists in every country in sub-Saharan Africa. It doesn't exist anywhere else but in black countries. And this race problem will be solved when every black country and only black countries bring in hundreds of millions of non-blacks and assimilate with them. I think it would take the average black man about 5 seconds to understand that I was talking about the final solution to the black problem. Now, this is going, I think this idea is going to expand around once it got started. And our race problem, which is really the basis of political correctness today, is going to change rather abruptly. I always have to get Bob's mantra in here. Now, the future, when someone takes the future seriously, that is, the futurologist or the official future with a capital F, they're always wrong. Because the future has not, the capitalized future has nothing to do with the with what's really going to happen. Many of the freeze frames in my mind, as I remember what used to be inevitable, one of those was a period of several months. Now, all of the official historians, all the official political scientists, all the official Sovietologists had been dealing with the Soviet Union, and before that the Russian Empire, for centuries. And all of a sudden, some, when the Soviet regime began to relax its power, suddenly the Ukraine and Estonia and these other countries started talking about pulling out of the Soviet Union. And I distinctly remember that for a month or two there, all the progressive cartoons were showing these Ukrainians and these Estonians in Confederate uniforms singing Dixie, so that they could make fun of this idea that this Soviet Union, this Russian Empire, was just going to fall apart. Well, it was pretty obvious to me it was going to fall apart. But the same people who had no idea that the Soviet Union was going to go down had no idea that it was going to break up. In other words, they had no idea it would suddenly stop being communist. They also had no idea that it was going to break up. They had nothing to offer for all their money and all their degrees. They had no idea what the future was actually going to look like. I remember in the 70s when the official doctrine was that, and you can see this in science fiction books, the Modi book by Larry Niven, where there was going to be a fusion of the Soviet Union and America. That was the inevitable future. Nobody goes back and looks at that stuff. And the reason is because the establishment has to control the future. An established religion has to control the future. The fact that it was wrong consistently in the past is quite simply ignored. If someone were to write a book about the inevitable future as portrayed by progressives, and remember, progressivism, the very name, depends on their knowing what the future will be like, since progress is moving toward the inevitable future by definition. But if anybody ever wrote a book quoting the establishment about what the inevitable future was in each decade, or every 5 years for that matter, you would laugh yourself sick. There's never been such a book, there won't be such a book, and it certainly won't get published. Now, I begin with the knowledge that the idea of the future, or the idea of someone who says this is 2006 and therefore you have to believe so-and-so, that this is not just absurd, it's laughably absurd. But I cannot seriously discuss the future with anyone who takes that seriously. I can't discuss medicine with somebody who still seriously believes that the cure for diseases is to bleed people, the way Galen said. This is simply beyond the pale. And so I end up talking to myself and maybe one or two other people because I am interested in what the future, the small f, is. But you have to begin by finding out, as in all politics, you have to find out why a person says what he says. And nobody says what the future will be for any reason, because he simply wants to know what the real future will be like. I'm about the only person who does, and that's because I'm worried about it, and I don't have to make a living on it. So, truth, the future, mercy, love, all these things, and ignorance. If you want to discuss these things with me, seriously, you would first have to understand where I'm coming from. And I don't mean just sort of understand theoretically. I mean, you have to laugh at the present ideas because they're so obvious. They're so obviously essential. People are believing exactly what they're supposed to believe because there's no money in the actual truth. This is Bob Whitaker, Porch Talk. I hope to talk to you again later.